good evening. It's Monday, May the 7th, and you've tuned into the Mike Malloy Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. My name is Jeff Ferris. I'll be sitting in for Mike Malloy all this week and next Monday as well. If you want to join today's conversation, 1-800-989-1480 is the phone number. We are, of course, streaming at novamradio.com. I got a website. It's called jefffarias.com. You can send me an email during the course of the program at jeff@jefffarias.com. F-A-R-I-A-S is the spelling. It's been a source of confusion for most of my life. Those three F's in a row, my mom really did me in. Three F's, my God, who could put that in a name? Many things to discuss today. Story out of Kansas, of course, another horrible tragedy, a tornado leveling an entire town in Kansas, and the governor of Kansas coming out today and stating essentially that she doesn't have the equipment and the National Guard to deal with this tragedy. And if another one happens, this is tornado season, or the beginning of it anyway, anywhere in Kansas, they're really strapped. Talk about that. We can talk about the impending dismissal of Paul Wolfowitz. It's not long before he's gone from the World Bank. We can talk about 28%. That's right, folks. Latest Newsweek poll, George Bush is at 28% approval rating, the lowest in a major national poll of his tenure in the White House. Apparently, the Republican Party has embraced the notion of timetables with John Boehner out there this weekend on the Fox News show claiming that they're setting a timetable of October, although they weren't calling it benchmark or timetable, but that's basically what it is. The president has till October, late September, early October, before the GOP leadership jumps ship. So anyway, there's lots to talk about. I'm going to depend on you to see. I like to do caller-driven radio. I like to keep the phones moving. I like to squeeze as many phone calls as I can into each segment to just sort of get a sense of what's on your mind out there. But before we jump to the phones, I want to play you one little snippet of audio. The Queen of England is in the States visiting with the president, and, you know, he didn't disappoint. He did manage to insult the Queen. We knew that had to happen. So anyway, this is just a little snippet, just a little something to put a smile on your face.
The American people are proud to welcome Your Majesty back to the United States, a nation you've come to know very well. After all, you've dined with 10 U.S. presidents. You helped our nation celebrate its bicentennial in 1976. She gave me a look that only a mother could give a child.
Yes, a very petulant and thick-headed child at that. My God. It's just a nonstop embarrassment. I mean, my God. He couldn't even get through, you know, a couple of quick sentences introducing the Queen, you know? That's our president. That's the man that 28% of the public still approves of. Depending on who you talk to, a 52% voted for, although I know some folks in Ohio who would disagree with that. Some people actually going to jail from Ohio because of the election officials actually going to jail in Ohio over that election. President Stumblebugs also had an interesting comment this week. He's introducing Alberto Gonzalez. And here's what he said. The American people are proud to welcome Your Majesty back to the... Oh, no, that's the other one. He introduced Alberto Gonzalez. He says, I'm honored to be here with the Eternal General of the United States, mi amigo Alberto Gonzalez. So now he's the Eternal General. I guess that means he's not planning on firing him anytime soon, sadly. The Eternal General. It's just mind-boggling to me. the level of stupidity. But you know what? Enough of my yakking. Let's get on the phones here. Let's start this crazy train. Armand in Florida, you're up first. Hello? Armand, you there? Apparently not. Let's go to Hamid. I hope I'm saying that right. In San Diego. Hamid?
Yes.
Yes, how are you today?
Good, how you doing?
Good, what's on your mind?
Good, yeah. Hey, I'm just about the 28% approval rating.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a sad point. One thing I was mentioning with talking with a couple of friends and colleagues is that it's gotten to a point where the fight is almost not worth it anymore. We see what's going on. We see how horrible this guy is, but it just seems like nobody really cares. And those individuals that do care, it seems like we're not getting anywhere. And those that are directly influenced feeling the effect of this presidency, the friends and family of those serving, you know, in Iraq, don't seem to really, you know, stepping up their game and speaking their minds. So if they're not stepping up and they're not speaking their minds, that they're not talking about their dismay with this president, then, you know, what would our voices count for is basically what I'm trying to say.
Right, well, yeah, right. If you won't listen to Cindy Sheehan or won't talk to her, you know, obviously he really doesn't care about the families of these soldiers.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, well, again, there's still, you know, a month ago it was 32%. So, you know, there's still lower we can go. And the longer this thing goes on, you know, Rove has been working for this, you know, permanent Republican majority, and ironically, what he's doing is guaranteeing a Democrat majority for maybe the next generation or two, essentially, because you know, I think this is worse than what Nixon did. What Nixon did was just, you know, it was paranoia, it was foolishness, it was trying to get a leg up on an opponent. People are dying over this idiot's mistakes, so it's a whole different game, you know. So anyway, let's go to Robert in Virginia. Robert, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Good. How are you doing today?
Better. Been better, but, you know, I'm doing okay right now, I suppose. I want to talk about that deal in Kansas. And I'm actually from Kansas. I grew up in Kansas. And there's some things that people just don't realize, that what everyone else sees is like a major catastrophe and a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much happens on a daily basis throughout the spring season in Kansas. And you know, Kathleen Sebelius has talked about she doesn't have the National Guard capacity to deal with catastrophes on this level. Well, they never have. In Kansas, what was it, last week, I believe there was like 86 tornadoes over the entire state.
Right.
In order to have National Guard to cover that many, you would have to have a million-man force with equipment to supplement them, and they'd have to be on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 90% of how we deal with our tornadoes and things like that is on the community level. And I believe last time I heard, the National Guard was turning away all the volunteers and all the people wanting to help with that town and the cleanup. We're turning them away because they felt the best way to deal with it was to evacuate the city and then begin the cleanup and the rescue process.
Right.
So, I mean, it's, you know, a lot of people just don't understand that. Okay, I understand, you know, yes, this was a large tornado, and it wiped out a town, wasn't a city. You know, the population was like 1,600, so it's a fairly mm-hmm. small town.
Right.
And this kind of thing happens on a daily basis. And if you were to cover this kind of thing on the news every day, you would literally have Kansas 24 hours a day, 7 days a week through the spring season. So, I mean, you know, I understand, you know, people are concerned about it. But when they start talking about, you know, it's Bush's fault because of all our National Guard troops over in Iraq, that's not even close to being accurate, because the National Guard just in Kansas, I mean, I'm just speaking from personal experience,
mm-hmm.
does not deal with catastrophes like that on a level that they would, like, you know, in Katrina, New Orleans. It's just,
well, they weren't there to deal with that one either.
Well, yeah, I know. So you know, when it comes down to it, it's all about, you know, all these volunteers and stuff that want to come and help. They've been turned away. Otherwise, this would have pretty much been cleaned up by now.
Right. Interesting.
So, I mean, you know, I had to get that out there, because a lot of people just don't understand, unless you live in that kind of situation, and, you know, unless you deal with something like that every day of the week during the spring and summer seasons, you really have no idea. You know, you just don't have a grasp on really the magnitude of what it would take to be prepared for every tornado we have.
Well, I got some audio I'm going to share a little bit later. Governor Kathleen Sebelius, also a report on CNN about the National Guard and their readiness. So, hey, thanks for your thoughts today, Robert.
Yep,
I appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Hey, it's the Molloy Show, 1-800-989-1480. I'm Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike. We'll be right back.
what you must, you do what you must do, and you do it well. I do it for you, honey, baby, can't you tell?
We're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show right here on Nova M Radio. 1-800-989-1480 is the phone number. Let's get right back on the phones. Eric in Miami, you're on the air. Hey, Eric, you there?
Oh, yes, I am.
Hey, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how are you?
All right.
Yes, I've been thinking about this tornado thing in Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying to myself that, you know, a lot of these people are always talking about doomsday and Jesus coming back at the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a tornado, and they see how terrible things can get when nature gets out of hand. And I'm just hoping that they will stop talking about all these disasters that they're hoping to happen when they see just how bad things can get, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, there is that, you know, the Lachey's or whatever, that guy who does the whole series of books about the Armageddon and the end of days and the whole, you know, Left Behind series. And yeah, I don't get it. I guess those people have been around forever, you know, the whole the end is near crowd, you know. So
I'm just hoping that these you know, people will open their eyes and see that, you know, there is no good coming out of these disasters,
right.
And that they should stop wishing for, you know, there's an old saying, you know, be careful what you wish for. You may just get it.
Well, I'm sure we'll be hearing Pat Robertson talk about, you know, God was mad at some part of Kansas for something or other, and then I'm sure Fred Phelps will show up down there and say it's because God hates gay people, or, you know, whenever something like this happens, it's really sad to see, as you point out, it's sad to see people sort of stepping up to try and take advantage of it for their own political agendas, you know.
Yeah, I think Pat Robertson should go to jail because his school has been staffing our Justice Department.
Yeah, no kidding.
And we need to know that he intends to become the next Ayatollah of America or not. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Eric. I appreciate that. Let's go to Dan in Kansas. Dan, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you, Jeff?
Good, good.
Hey, I'd like to make 2 points. One, I'd like to respond to the ex-Kansan that lives in Virginia.
Tornadoes every day? Yeah.
Yeah, I live about 60 miles from where the tornado hit, and I'm also a retired National Guard officer.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a history of the federal government raping the State Guard assets for federal missions. And this is just an extreme example, and what Kathleen Seville is referring to is not the manpower.
Right, it was the equipment.
Exactly.
Right.
That their equipment has been taken to Iraq, and for whatever reason, Bush has continued this war. And as a result, our citizens suffer, and that's what she's referring to, not necessarily that, you know, it's a manpower issue at all.
Right, right. Yeah, she was going specifically, they have no front loaders, they have no bulldozers, they don't have the stuff that they need to start clearing that stuff out. And we're seeing the same thing down on the Gulf Coast and in New Orleans. The personnel and the hard, heavy equipment to start moving stuff out just isn't there anymore, and the stuff just sits.
Yeah, and for 20 years, the regular Army has tried to take the assets from the National Guard, and there's a long, long history of that.
Right, right. Interesting. Well, you stay safe there. You know, you guys got a long tornado season ahead of you, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Well, we will. We'll try our best. I appreciate your talk show, man.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
All
take
right,
care.
Bye.
Let's go to Scott, Federal Way, Washington. Scott, welcome.
Oh, yeah. You know, these Republicans who are so-called talking about the timetables now and stuff, you know, gee, I wonder, now, why weren't these questions asked during the debates that were going on Thursday?
Right, right.
Don't you think that that's awfully odd that none of these questions were asked then?
That they didn't talk about the timetables in Iraq? Yeah, that is odd. They did talk about evolution, though.
Oh, you know, it's almost like it was a contest of who could be the biggest whack job or the biggest Nazi or something. And I didn't really watch the debate. I just got caught the glimpse of that stuff on YouTube.
Right. Yes, yeah, I saw a few snippets of it, and I couldn't sit through the whole thing. But they're not even debates anymore. Somebody pointed it out. It was a caller on Randy Rhoads' show. He says it was more like a speed dating with Chris Matthews, essentially.
Well, I like what Mike Gravel said before that debate was, is that, you know, that they're all being hypocritical, and that if they have something to say, that they need to come on out and say it.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Because of that, and including your senator and well, he used to be my former senator because I used to live down there, and Thane McCain.
Yeah. He looked really unhinged during that debate. You know, he just, I don't know, something about his body language, it was just really strange.
Well, you know, the way that Mike Malloy explained it is that, you know, he's going through that PTSD, and apparently he's had a severe case of it for years, and the way that he was tortured over there years ago, I guess part of his arms came out partly of his sockets and all of that kind of stuff, and I don't know if that's part of it or not, but he's all over the map.
Yeah.
Why would you want somebody like that for president? But I do have a prediction, and I could be wrong about this, but you know who I think who's probably going to get it on that side?
Who do you think?
I would say the person who was not on that stage,
Fred
Chuck
Thompson?
Hagel.
Oh, Hagel. See, I like Hagel, but he's offended too many Republicans. Hey, Scott, I got to go. I can hear the music in the background. I'm coming up on a hard break. Thanks for your call.
Thanks.
And thanks for listening. Hey, it's the Mike Malloy Show right here on Nova M Radio. I'm Jeff Farias sitting in tonight and all week. Stick around. Hey, we're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Jeff Farias sitting in for Mike all week. Staying up a little late, a little bit past my bedtime. Joined by a very special guest in this segment, Paul Waldman from Media Matters for America joins us. Paul, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well. You guys recently did a study looking at sort of gender and race issues on the cable news networks.
We did. You know, during the IMUS controversy, we noticed something kind of unusual was happening on cable,
mm-hmm.
which was that all of a sudden you saw all these black faces appearing as guests on the cable news shows.
Right.
And we thought, gee, you know, that's not what we ordinarily see. Why don't we take a look at this and see if we can actually quantify this to see what's really going on? And so we examined the week before the IMUS controversy, the week of the IMUS controversy, and then a week that came after the IMUS controversy to look at just how many of the guests that appear on the cable networks are white, how many are men, how many are members of different minority groups.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found probably won't surprise too many people is that the guests that come on those cable networks ordinarily are an extraordinarily white and male group.
Wow.
Not too many African Americans, and interestingly enough, almost no Latinos. Latinos are about 14 or 15% of the American population, and they made up less than 2% of the guests during the time that we examined. We also looked at, for instance, the people who host the shows on cable,
mm-hmm.
Across five different cable networks. From 4 p.m. to midnight, which is sort of the personality-based shows where
right.
the person's name is in the title, like Tucker or
mm-hmm.
Hardball with Chris Matthews. And there were 35 hosts and co-hosts that appear on those cable networks during that time. 29 of them are men, and all 35 of them are white.
Wow.
So if we would expect, I think, that the people who come on to talk about current events would be something that looks like a representation of America, but it's not happening on cable.
Interesting. Now, I notice in the mornings, I know CNN has changed their lineup a little. They have more African-American men on in the morning. MSNBC, you'll see a few more women during the morning hours in the earlier part of the day. But essentially at night when it's, you know, the heavy, heavy news-watching time, heavily, heavily men. That's just, I guess not stunning, but really surprising when you look at the numbers as to how extreme it really is.
Yeah, it really is, you're exactly right. When it's supposed to be the kind of hard news time,
mm-hmm.
that's when it's all men and pretty much, mostly men and pretty much all white. But you know, one of the things that was striking about that week when the IMUS controversy was going on wasn't just that it was kind of a different lineup, but one began to think, well, you know, why aren't these people who are on there speaking very, you know, having very interesting things to say about the IMUS controversy, why aren't they on all the time?
Right.
But, you know, what we see is that they only seem to ask African Americans to come on these shows when there is an issue with a specifically racial component to it.
Right.
But there are, you know, lots and lots of people who could be commenting on all kinds of news events,
mm-hmm.
but it seems as though they only expand their Rolodexes that far when it's a racial issue.
Yeah, I always found that really odd myself. And it doesn't even have to be a racial component, just a racial person involved. If there's a Barry Bonds controversy, all of a sudden they'll find African-American sports writers to come and talk about that, when actually it kind of goes beyond race. Well, there was a recent poll done on Bonds and perceptions about Bonds and his steroid use among blacks and whites. That was a really fascinating piece. Did you see anything on that?
No, I didn't.
It was really interesting. It was almost like 70% of African Americans feel like Bonds is getting treated unfairly because of the steroid things, and it's only like about 10% of white people. It was really, really fascinating. Look, very, very different perspectives. Again, huge numbers of African Americans really wanted to see Bonds break Hank Aaron's records. Really small numbers of white Americans wanted him to see the break the records. And interesting, you know, because. Whenever we think we've come a long way in terms of race relations in this country, a study like yours comes along and we kind of scratch our heads and say, you know, we probably got a long way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the part of what may perpetuate that is that we do seem to have these kinds of segregated discussions.
Mm-hmm.
When, as you say, that when there's a racial component, whether it's a sports story or a news story, then we have, you know, people from kind of all walks of life, all racial groups that are brought on our television screens to talk about it.
Right.
But the status quo, the ordinary run of news that occurs in a given week, tends to be mostly white guys.
Interesting. What do you account for you mentioned a really surprising lack of any Latino voices on the major cable news networks.
Yeah, that was something that was really particularly surprising. I mean, you know, you would have expected that during the week of the Amos controversy, certainly since there was both a racial component and this sexist component to it, unsurprisingly, they would seek out some black voices to mm-hmm. comment on this. So it's not that we were expecting that there would be more Latinos who were coming on to talk about IMUS, but one would just think that ordinarily there would be at least a few here and there
right.
who would be commenting on the news. But as I said, it was less than 2% of the guests on these cable shows over this three-week period that we looked at were Latino, which was really surprising. I mean, they, you know, Latinos are now the largest minority group in America.
Yeah.
During the last census, I think, was the first time that they passed African Americans in size.
And so
obviously that's not being reflected. I don't know if it's reflected in the newsrooms or not, but it's certainly not reflected in the Rolodexes of the bookers who decide who's going to get on the cable news shows.
Well, even when we discuss immigration issues on the cable news shows, you don't see a lot of Latino voices or faces, with the possible exception, I can't even remember the gentleman's name, but he's actually one of the foreign ministers in Mexico, or was in Vicente Fox's government. Every now and then he would pop up, but that was about it. On immigration issues, we're not even hearing a lot of Latino voices, which is really surprising. Well, I mean, it's a little skewed in Phoenix. Obviously, locally, we have a lot more Latino anchors and people in the news like that. But on the national scale, we just don't see it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And,
you know, maybe that will change in the coming years. But our hope at Media Matters is that when we do studies like this, we can kind of draw attention to the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe then, you know, hopefully the people who book the shows, you know, I'm realistic about this. I don't think there's any kind of conspiracy to keep people off the air.
Right,
and
right.
They have to make those decisions about who they're going to call very quickly. They usually,
mm-hmm.
you know, need somebody in the next hour, and a lot of it depends on who's available.
Right.
But they do have a rather small Rolodex.
Mm-hmm.
And if they made an effort, they could, you know, expand that to try to bring in some more people. You know, I live in Washington, and believe me, you can't throw a stick without hitting somebody who is trying to get on television.
Right.
So
right.
It's not like they wouldn't be able to find people to go on of any particular race, any gender, any age that they wanted to if they just tried.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You also found in the study that even though women represent more than half of our population, they seldom compromise half of the guests showing up on cable news.
Yeah, and, you know, we looked at each individual show, and there were, you know, most shows don't have anything near half representation of women. And, you know, again, there may be different issues that are discussed in a given week, but typically you saw the guest list was about two-thirds men.
Right.
I think that's probably true if you would look at not just cable shows, but, you know, I'm just speculating here. I can't imagine that the results would be very different if you looked at things like, you know, who gets on Nightline, who
right.
gets on the Sunday shows.
Mm-hmm.
It still is a primarily white male preserve.
Well, it's interesting because when you do see women in the cable news, it's usually to talk about American Idol or pop culture type things, and not very much in terms of the harder news issues, which is an interesting distinction as well, I guess.
Yeah, and it may be that somewhere, maybe even not consciously, when the producers and the bookers are thinking about who they want to talk about these issues, they think, well, you know, if it's a serious issue, then, you know, the men are the ones who talk about it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And those lighter issues that you talk about, they get more women on. But that, you know, there's kind of a self-perpetuating aspect to that the more we see that, the less we, the less we take people seriously, and it's harder for women then to get taken seriously as commenters on major news stories, mm-hmm. if they don't get a chance in the first place.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it sort of perpetuates itself in a sense, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. What are you working on next?
Oh, we have a whole bunch of super secret projects that I can't reveal. But you know, we're going to keep on doing what we at Media Matters do every day, which is we examine the news, we examine what's going on in the mainstream media and the conservative media. But we're also thinking of different ways that we can look at issues like this to really kind of start a conversation. You know, this is a finite time period. It may not answer every question that there is to ask about this issue,
mm-hmm.
But hopefully it can get people talking and thinking about it.
Hey, just, yeah, get the conversation moving forward. I think it's a great idea. I love the work you do. Again, mediamatters.org is the website. If you're not familiar with it, you really should get yourself over there and check it out. Sort of the watchdogs of the sort of conservative media, the right-wing noise machine, as they're sometimes called. And you guys do a great job of just taking what they say and holding it up to a spotlight. And it's amazing how angry those on the right get after you.
They absolutely do. We take that as a great measure of our success that we make. A lot of people on the right wing extremely annoyed.
Oh, you're driving Bill O'Reilly crazy. It's great.
That's absolutely true.
Hey, Paul, thanks a lot for your time today. Really appreciate talking to you. MediaMatters.org is the website. Paul Waldman, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Jeff.
Take care. Hey, we're going to take a break. It's the Mike Malloy Show. When we get back, Paul was my only guest for the show today. The rest of the time is going to be devoted to the callers. A couple of stories I got to hear. I do want to talk more about the impact of the National Guard not being there in Kansas to deal with that, the aftermath of that tornado. Lots to talk about. We'll be right back after these messages. To the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. 1-800-989-1480 is the phone number. We are streaming at novamradio.com. You can also get podcasts of this program over there as well. My name's Jeff Farias. I usually do the program right before Mike Malloy's on Nova M from 6 to 9 on the East Coast. Sitting in for Malloy tonight. Check out my website at jefffarias.com. And you can email me during the program at jeff@jefffarias.com. Right back to the phones. Up first in the queue. I'll take them in the order I get them. Gary in Scottsdale, you're up.
Jeff?
Yes, sir.
All right, Jeff.
How are you doing
blink
today?
One, I'm doing all right. You blink once if you don't believe in evolution. real problem, I think, with America is that it is no longer run by the people, nor run for the people,
mm-hmm.
but run for corporations.
Yep.
Big business has taken over our country entirely. The tobacco industry all stood up, put their hands in the Bible, and said, tobacco is not addictive.
Right.
Well, we all know that wasn't true. The oil company, we're not paying only 10% of all of the oil that the American public uses comes from Arabian countries.
Mm-hmm.
If they stopped entirely giving us oil, we could still flood the country with oil. Exxon would make $5 billion in a quarter, and we'd be paying $2 per gallon of gasoline.
Right.
So our country basically gets run for the benefit of CEOs who are in charge of these companies. I don't remember the name of the gentleman who got $411 million from ExxonMobil as his retirement package.
F. Lee Raymond. He lives here in Paradise Valley.
Oh, really?
Yep. Well, he lives here in Arizona.
I guess at that price, $411 million, he can afford to live in Paradise Valley.
Yep.
But the bottom line is, people need to understand that when you break everything down to this lowest common denominator, is everyone has a different agenda.
Mm-hmm.
What we need to do is we need to start accepting everyone's different agenda, but unite as people. Allow people their own thoughts. Allow people their own faith. Allow people their own ideology. Run the country based on the Constitution. Have term limits. And don't empower corporations to dictate to doctors how much money they're going to make. Pharmacy dictate to the American people how much they're going to pay for their medicines.
Mm-hmm.
Do you realize they're talking now about bringing in medicines from Japan and New Zealand at 2/3 the price? Where do you think those countries are getting their medicines?
Yeah, they're made here. Eli Lilly and Merck and the big companies make them here. Yeah, same thing with the drugs coming from Canada. The drugs that are made here, sold in Canada, and then sold back to us cheaper than the drug company. Yeah, we pay more for the same drugs that they pay for in the rest of the world for right here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know what will happen? It will not affect the Americans at all, because what's going to happen is they'll buy back the drugs and still charge us a higher price.
Right.
They'll charge us the same price they're charging us on our copays.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not on the there's a special name for a list. If it's not on that list, you're still going to pay full price for it. America needs to be taken back by the people peacefully, be accepting of everyone's beliefs and faith. Faith is a great thing. I have nothing wrong with faith. I believe in evolution. I don't believe there's anything wrong with having great faith. But when you're combining the Constitution and the Bible, I think there's an issue there.
Oh, absolutely. It flies in the face of what the founders intended.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Now, I do believe the founders never intended for American people to run the country. That's why we have
That's why we have a Senate. I mean, the House is supposed to represent the people more directly, but the Senate is supposed to look out for the bigger picture and look out for the whole country.
Exactly. Right. And then what happens is all of the large corporations, what they do is they hire these lobbyists. They do nothing but throw money at these people,
mm-hmm.
throw trips at these people, and they own them. They own the country. So essentially, our country is, you know, bashing Bush. Bush is passé at this point.
Right.
28% approval rating, 62% of the people either don't like him or don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So what about the people who supported Bush? Those are the people that are going to start to come out of the woodwork and talk about Reagan being this great guy. He wasn't.
No,
Reagan
not at all.
Was
yes.
the...
I lived through the Reagan thing, too, and it's just amazing to watch the revision of history as to what
exactly.
Reagan meant for this country. I lived in New York City during the Reagan years, and it was
also
remarkable to see just the throngs of people forced into the streets, the abject poverty that was caused by Reagan, the unrest. We're still dealing with what Reagan did, dismantling the unions. Reagan started this process, as Tom Hartman so eloquently states, started this process of dismantling the middle class and destroying this country.
I couldn't agree with you more. He tried to break the union, and he did successfully. And that was the beginning of the end. That was what we call privatization.
Yep.
And when you start talking about privatization, what you're really talking about is taking government, which I think should be involved, giving it to corporations whose only interest is not in the people, but in the making of a buck over the people.
Yep. In a short-sighted manner, because they're not even recognizing that they need those people as consumers. You know what I mean? It's so short-sighted. There's no long-term thinking in this country anymore, at the corporate or at the government level.
No, there isn't. And the question is this. can we possibly have a recession? We don't make anything.
Right. Yeah. No kidding.
So the actual definition of recession is three straight quarters where you have no gross domestic product growth.
Right.
Or you lose growth.
Yeah.
Well, we don't produce anything anymore.
Well,
all we really do is spend and spend and spend, and the saving rate of Americans is like 0.04%.
Right.
Which is absurd.
Yeah.
Because they're always being pounded with by this car, by that car, by this, by the iPod, by everything.
Yeah.
They are keeping us as a debtor nation at the American people level, and we're a debtor nation. China, if we ever
right.
really pissed China off.
Exactly. If China decides to pull the plug, we're all screwed. Hey, Gary, I got to go. I can hear the music in the background. I got a hard break coming up.
Have a nice afternoon.
Thanks for your thoughts, buddy. Hey, we'll get back with lots more of your phone calls at the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Jeff Ferrier sitting in. Stick around.
Time for a sign-up. Going Yankee, break my heart. There's nothing left for us to say now. You and the press room's got a fall. I walked into the nearest bar. I sat and looked towards the sea. I wandered drunk and down a beach.
Hey, we're back, folks. The Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. My name's Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike tonight. I'm going to jump right back to the phones. A lot of folks have been holding patiently. First up, Paul in Texas. Paul, you're on the air.
Hello there, Jeff.
Hey,
how you doing?
Good. How you doing today?
Well, I just, there was something that, I was listening to the radio today. I was listening to Ed Schultz.
Uh-huh.
And Ed Schultz was going on and on about various things, but I was born here in Texas,
mm-hmm.
and I am a lifelong Democrat. I'm a member of a labor union.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a godless heathen, but I make gasoline for a living.
All right.
And Ed was going on about how this was all a lie about the refineries having problems, and I'm just going to have to tell you that regardless of what you want to believe or what anybody wants to believe, there is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
The refinery that I work at, we had a fire in February, and the entire place was shut down for 2 months. It wasn't, it was a localized fire, but it was in a bad spot. It shut off all our utilities, all our instrumentation, and all our flare lines.
Mm-hmm.
And I happen to be on vacation right now, but I worked 32 days straight, 12-hour shifts, trying to get this sucker back on. And I've worked in a refinery for 30 years now,
mm-hmm.
and I have never seen anything like this. And if anybody has any questions about whether there are refinery problems, there really are. I'm just telling you this.
Is it just that the refineries are getting old? They haven't been invested in? They haven't been updated? Is that where a lot of the problem is coming from? Or there just aren't enough of them? Is that?
No, not at all.
Uh-huh.
What the deal is we have government regulations that have changed the way that we have to run these refineries.
Mm-hmm.
In 1992, they changed the specifications for diesel. We started making low-sulfur diesel.
Right.
Well, this year, we started making ultra-low-sulfur diesel. And it costs more to do this, and we had to build new units in order to do this. This is government regulations.
Okay.
Huh. And while we were down making this transition, we were doing other turnarounds. All these units are, if you run them hard, you have to turn them around
right.
faster.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So you guys are just dealing with just different fuel standards, and that's what's slowing things down, causing a lot of issues on your end. But, yeah, I'm not sure what Schultz was talking about. We don't get him here in Phoenix anymore, I'm proud to say. I can't defend anything that he was trying to talk about. But yeah, I understand there are obviously lots of problems with our infrastructure on so many different levels. A lot of things aren't being, you know, maintained or kept up to speed, and our capacities to produce anything in this country is declining.
It is not so much the infrastructure or the age of the refineries. A lot of it is regulations.
Right.
It takes me the same job that I used to do 10 years ago in 5 days takes 30 days because of all the government regulations, all the permits that I have to file. It's ridiculous.
Right.
It's all changed in the last 10 years.
Right. Interesting. Well, obviously, I mean, I can understand on some levels because obviously we're dealing with some different environmental issues out there. You have to spend more than half a day in Phoenix to see that there are some air quality issues going on. A lot of it has to do with emissions. So I understand that the government trying to step in there and trying to get a handle on better, cleaner fuels. But again, a lot of times government gets in there and what we find in a lot of industries, just paperwork. We find this in education. You hear from teachers and administrators, they're just buried in paperwork. You find in law enforcement, people just buried in government paperwork, and you're saying it's the same thing in the gasoline and oil business.
Oh yes, yeah. Absolutely. It's so crazy now, but like I said, I've been doing it for 30 years, and it has really metamorphosized in the last 10 years into something that's hard to handle. Hard to handle.
Well, I appreciate your call, Paul. Thanks for informing us.
Okay,
take care. Let's go next up, Robert in San Francisco. Robert, you're on the air.
Yeah, Jeff, it's great to hear your program this evening.
Well, thank you, sir.
I wanted everybody to remember that the King-Zelikow Commission investigation into 9/11 never considered controlled demolition, never considered U.S. Air Force training exercises involving live flight hijackings, commercial airline planes crashing into buildings, and Cheney was running the terrorism training exercises that day. So you got Rummy and Cheney and the U.S. Air Force general who was promoted to top of the Joint Chiefs there.
Right. And that was unprecedented. Cheney was put in charge of NORAD just a couple of weeks before 9/11. Never happened before. We've never had a vice president in that capacity.
And they changed the standard operating procedures for interdiction of off-course airliners as well.
Right,
and
changed the protocol.
As soon as they got in there, they wanted to go into Iraq. Tenet and O'Neill and Clark all have come out and said the first thing they wanted to do was go into Iraq. The neocons wanted a catastrophe, in fact.
A new Pearl Harbor, right.
And the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations guys, Zbigniew Brzezinski, a big buddy of Rockefeller's, came right out in his book at 210 years ago called The Grand Chessboard. Three times this phrase appears in this book. A catastrophe on the order of Pearl Harbor needs to occur within the United States in order to galvanize the American people into imperial mobilization, democracy being inimical to imperialism. I mean, you know, they laid it right out there. It happened on their watch. It's never been investigated. And here we are going after backing up their monopolies when it doesn't free us at all. It enslaves us. It's fighting this mythical war on terror. You know, it's such a crock. I mean, the solutions like hemp, for instance, that produces everything that petrochemicals do. And hemp is just an amazing thing. You should be able to get a license to grow it. Farmers get licenses to grow, federal license to grow tobacco. But yet, because it's classified as a narcotic, even though it has industrial hemp, has only 0.1 to 0.3% THC. It's impossible to use it as a narcotic.
Right. Okay? It used to grow in the ditches in Indiana, and I can verify that fact.
Tennessee had a strain that produced 8 tons per acre. And this stuff, food, fiber, fuel, and medicine, or hemp, or spirulina, for instance, the Aztecs, the Africans, the Incas, an aquatic plant that reproduces like a bacteria 40 times its volume in 48 hours, 4 times the chlorophyll of alfalfa, which is the mirror image of human blood molecular arrangement. It's 70% protein with a similar amino ratio to human flesh, and it has a glycogen cell wall, not a cellulose cell wall, so it's 90% digestible. The plant is the future. It helped create the oxygen atmosphere that we have. It's wonderful in salads, in smoothies. It's $40 a pound.
Wow.
Now, that's the thing. I mean, we're subsidizing all these agriculture businesses, big beef and all this kind of stuff, or pork and all that, and the pollution they do. But Christopher Hills, an eccentric British investor, wanted to bring this to people to help save the Africans and all this from famine. The thing is that the NASA people are thinking about it for their space travels because it lives on their waste, absorbs carbon dioxide, and produces oxygen.
Wow.
Don't we need to sequester carbon dioxide? Hemp produces four times the oxygen absorption that trees do in a similar area because it grows 10 feet in 10 weeks.
Right. And several, you can turn it over several times a year. Yeah. Yeah.
50%. It's 50% fat, which all birds seek out the hemp seed first because it's so nutritious. It's 50% fat. It's 33% protein, and it's 20% vitamin E. Why is it banned, Jeff?
That happened because of the paper industry, and also the good folks at Anheuser-Busch have a say in that as well. It cuts into their profits. It hurts the timber industry, the paper industry. These are all these very strong lobbyists going after it, essentially. I mean, and one thing you didn't, historically, the Declaration of Independence was written on hemp paper.
And the founding fathers said that it should be planted everywhere.
Washington grew it, yeah.
And we need to start doing it. We have a smokeless delivery system for people that need to use it as medicine.
Right.
No carbon tetrachloride, nor carbon monoxide. I'm telling you, there are simple solutions. The problem is the corporate monopolists want more and more power. They're Luciferian. They're greedy. They talk about they string gnats to swallow camels with their religious backers.
Mm-hmm.
But they do not want a sane solution. As abortion goes down, they don't like that. They want a total abstinence program. They don't want to work with, create a culture that leads toward a reduction in abortion or a reduction in sort of health-induced,
Robert, got to cut you off, buddy. Got a hard break coming up.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for your thoughts. Thanks for the information. Appreciate it. Hey, but right back with more of the Molloy Show right here on Nova M Radio. NovaMradio.com. You can check out the podcast and the stream. We'll be right back after these messages with more of your phone calls. Hey, we're back on the big show here, the Mike Molloy Show on Nova M Radio. Let's get right back on the phones. Terry in Phoenix. Terry, how you doing?
Oh, glad to hear that. I wish they'd play it on the Clear Channel.
That was your idea. That's why it's in the mix. So.
Yeah, that, it's the war, song that ended the Vietnam War. If they play it more, it would probably help end the Iraq War.
Yeah.
The reason I called, I was watching Keith Olbermann earlier, and right now, Congress is investigating the Justice Department's Voting Rights Division because this guy, Bradley Schlotzman, so far has not prosecuted one case, according to Keith Olbermann, where a black person has been denied the right to vote. And since then, they spent all their time trying to act as friends of the courts to laws like we have here in Arizona, where you have to have a birth certificate or a passport to register to vote, which has denied something like 33,000 citizens the right to vote, like this individual. And I use that term very loosely. We have for a county attorney, Thomas, was going to show how good this law was by prosecuting all those people who were illegally voting to show how many illegal aliens were voting. And after he had this big press conference, he was going to get all these illegal aliens for voting in our election. It turned out, and the newspaper had to find us out because he suddenly dropped all mention of it. He prosecuted 11 people for voting illegally, and they were all convicted felons, not illegal aliens, and most of them are Republicans.
Right. And of all the people who were disenfranchised, people who weren't allowed to vote in the last two elections, only 11% of them had Hispanic surnames. So well, the vast majority of the people being affected by our Prop 200 out here, which causes, you got to have a proper ID, a passport doesn't count, and all these things don't count, are pretty much the elderly and women in large part.
Well, the point is that the people who put this on were not concerned about illegal aliens voting.
Right.
They wanted minorities to be prevented from voting because mostly poor people and minorities who vote Democrat are the last ones to have passports or birth certificate. I was born on an Indian reservation. I didn't have a birth certificate.
Right.
In Georgia, they have this poll tax where they want you to pay $20
for a voting ID. Yep.
And we had a woman city council person a couple elections ago. There was the UFO lady who was always involved with those UFO things.
Mm-hmm.
And she, the day before the election, she asked the police to check any Mexican who voted in her district for city council. And if they didn't have proper ID, they were to be sent to Mexico, even if they were American citizens. And you had in Florida where legal people were turned away from polling place saying they were convicted felons.
Right, choice point.
Right. But this guy Schlafen, none of that seemed to bother him. The only thing that bothered him was making sure that the laws that suppressed the vote were supported by his Justice Department. He didn't have time for, when in Detroit, when the head of the Republican Party in Michigan said, the only way we can turn Michigan Republican is suppress the black vote. In Detroit. They didn't have no time for stuff like that. He just had time. And I hope the Democrats in Congress, and this is the perfect thing to add on to this supplement, because if the troops are not fighting for the right to vote, what are they fighting for? They should put on this bill to fund the troops that it is a crime to deny an American citizen to vote, and any law that prevents an American citizen to vote, the person putting that law in, including those who signed petitions, are committing a felony and should be put in jail. And that should be put on that bill.
Well, I'm voting for a very small cell for Russell Pierce. I'd like to see him jailed post-haste.
Hey, like I said, they should put that. They can do that in Congress. And if Bush wants the troops funded in Iraq, well, they should be fighting for our right to vote anyway to start with.
Excellent point, Terry. Thanks for your call, buddy. Also, part of the fallout from that, this whole attorney general scandal that we're seeing now is tied in with this issue, with this whole notion that there are people out there trying to vote illegally. That people are coming across the border from Mexico to try and influence our elections. It's just not happening, folks. It's just not happening. We'll be right back after this with more of the Mike Malloy Show, more of your phone calls. Stick around. My life's a funny thing. Am I still too young? You kiss the diamond bear. She took his ring, took his babies. It took him minutes, took her nowhere. Heaven knows he'd have taken anything. All night. She wants a young American. Young American, young American. She wants a young American. All night. But she wants a young. Hey, we're back. It's the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. My name's Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike tonight and all week, actually. I usually have the show that comes on before this on Nova M from 6 to 9 p.m. on the East Coast. Check it out on the stream. Also got a website, jefffarias.com. Check that out. You can email me at jeff@jefffarias.com. And now back to the phones. Joe in Miami, you're up first, buddy. What's on your mind? Hey, Joe.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, that's all right. You're on the air.
Listen, I was just two quick things about Paul from with the refinery. I'm going to trust the refineries. The refinery makers haven't built a new refinery here since 1976. I trust them like I trusted Enron when they ripped off the California electrical market.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you mentioned about the co-star of Bedtime for Bonzo, Reagan.
Yeah.
You watched the Republican debate where Giuliani was telling me how strong Reagan was, that the Iranians were afraid. I seem to remember Reagan operatives meeting with the Iranians in Paris before the election, setting up an arms for hostage deal.
Right.
I seem to remember Robert McFarlane on the 707 with a cake and a bunch of weapons for Iran, landing in Tehran. I mean, do people forget what's going on?
Yeah, people seem to forget a lot about Ronald Reagan. There's been a great effort to, and we saw it, you know, a couple of years ago at his funeral, a manifestation of that process.
And the fact of the matter is, the guy had Alzheimer's in his second term.
I mean,
people don't realize that. I mean, you had a guy who was mentally ill running the country.
Yep.
And so who was making decisions? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, and now we also had people, you know, everybody was pretty critical of Alberto Gonzalez a couple of weeks ago when he said, "I don't know," you know, so many times. Reagan was the master of that. Reagan said, "I don't recall," some 80 times when he was testifying about Iran-Contra.
Do you remember when they showed him that in that trial, they showed him that piece of paper signed by General Vesey, and he couldn't remember who the guy was?
Right, right.
I mean, that's what he had running the country.
Yeah.
Take care, Joe.
Hey, thanks a lot, Joe. Yeah, I'm no fan of Ronald Reagan, am I? That's for sure. Let's go to Deborah in Ahwatukee. You're up next, Deborah. How you doing?
Hey, Jeff/Mike. How are you doing?
Good.
Listen, I had something really strange, I think, happened to me, and I wondered if it's happened to you. 3 or 4 weeks ago, I applied for a Chase Visa card and also a card from Shamrock, since I recently got a diesel car. And I've gotten letters from both of them saying that I have to send in copies of a couple different things to verify my identity before they'll give me a card.
Hmm. Interesting.
You suppose somebody heard me on a telephone conversation with a friend saying that I hate Bush and I hope he's impeached?
I don't know. I mean, maybe that's a good thing, though, if they're being a little... But I've never heard of that before.
But get this. I went into the branch, into the bank today. I mean, I have all my accounts with Chase. And I even had a Visa card before when they were Bank One. And I went into the bank saying, okay, here I am. You know, this is who I am. And the lady called the credit card section. And they said, no, we need a copy of her Social Security card and a copy of some kind of bill that identifies you.
Interesting. Now, you know, I don't know if you heard my conversation with Tom Kubaney last week. He's an American citizen born in Michigan of Syrian descent. He went to go to try and get a mortgage and found out he was on there was a terror watch list for financial dealings. He couldn't get on a mortgage because his name had been flagged because his middle name was similar to the one of Saddam's sons or something like that, you know. I had no idea. Apparently there are some 30 different watch lists out there, not just the flight list we all hear about. So maybe you got your name on one of these watch lists.
Yeah, the lady at the bank said, "Oh, it's a random thing. It's kind of like the lottery that, you know, since the Patriot Act, you know, this is what happens."
That's kind of weird. Yeah, like the sort of the random thing they do.
I'm not going to send a copy of my Social Security card to a complete stranger.
Right, right. Wow, that's really weird.
Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah.
I just wondered if anybody else has had this experience.
No, it's vaguely similar to the story that I talked about last week with Tom Kubaney.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
That's pretty bad. So did he not ever find out what you can do about it?
Well, he actually got an attorney to go after it, and he also had a friend who was in the newspaper business who kind of started writing some articles and got some attention, and eventually he was in the process now of, he'd been told that it was being cleared up, and he was in the process of trying to get a new mortgage, so...
I feel a letter to the editor coming on.
Yeah, you might want to Google him. His name's Tom Kubaney. It's K-U-B-B-A-N-Y. Google him because his story's been written up and he's been on TV in Northern California, and you might be able to find out a little bit more. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Deborah. Good luck.
Oh, bye.
Wow, that's weird. Let's go to Rich in Toledo, Ohio. Rich, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to try to make a couple points about the oil companies.
Mm-hmm.
If they're having so much problems with the changing over to the low sulfur diesel and stuff, which they've been doing for 25 years, mm-hmm. ever since Unleaded came out, why are they making such profits?
Right. Record profits each quarter.
Record profits.
Yeah.
And I can guarantee you, with Bush and Cheney being in the White House, they keep on blaming everything on the environmentalists.
Right.
He's waived environmental regulations already. If they wanted to build another refinery, you can bet they would get it done.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, they don't want to make the investment, is what
you're
saying.
No, well, yeah. that's their bad excuse, you know. Mm-hmm. When they want the prices to go up, hey, you know, one of our refineries are down. With the environmentalists, they're holding us back.
Right.
You know, so it's all garbage.
Wow. Interesting. So there's a piece on Jack Cafferty on CNN today about asking people if they thought they were going to see $4 a gallon, and some 75% of Americans expect to be paying $4 a gallon by the end of the year.
Well, you know, that's why Cheney doesn't want anybody to know who was in the meeting with him.
Right, right.
And you know, if the Democrats don't start going after the oil companies like they said they were going to, I'll never vote for another Democrat again. I mean, I'm just getting tired of everything. They said they were going to do so much when they first got in. They're down in Washington celebrating because they passed all these bills. I haven't seen a one of them cross the president's desk yet.
Yeah, well, he's going to veto him, basically. I mean, it's right now, it's gamesmanship, which is sad. It's gamesmanship at this point.
At least if they get him sent up, they've done something.
Right.
But
until
they get it on his desk, I don't want to hear him celebrating.
Right. Yeah, the one thing they are doing they are doing oversight. They are having hearings. They are holding people to account. That's one positive. Whether or not they have enough of a majority to actually get any real legislation, make any real changes, I'm cautiously optimistic, but not very hopeful,
I mean,
to tell you the truth.
But look what the Republicans did with a slim majority. I mean, at least they got everything set up, and, you know, the president was their man, so he signed it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not even getting anything sent up to the president's desk.
Right, right. Yeah.
So, you know, until they start doing that, I don't want to hear them celebrating all the time.
You bring up a good point, Rich.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Let's go next to Matthew in Bedford, Texas. Matthew, you're on the air.
Hey, Jeff. I've called a couple times while you've been subbing for Mike, but it's nice to hear your voice again.
Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
I've heard your radio show, and good stuff, man. Good
stuff.
Thank
you. Thank you.
Don't mean to shower you with praise, but...
Flatty will get you everywhere.
Yeah, I know. Before I hawk a blog I'm doing, I'd just like to say something. I mean, I've been hearing discussion about, Republicans recently. Before I get into it, is it just me, or is it since the 2006 elections, the Republicans have gone from plain evil to totally bonkers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
they're going nuts.
After seeing the Republican debates, a.k.a. right-wing panic fest 2007,
yeah.
Just seeing all these Republicans doing for Ronald Reagan what Monica did for Bill, I mean, it's just like, are they so desperate?
Yeah. The most stunning thing of that whole debate to me was the fact that there are three people who want to be president of the United States that will hold their hand up and say they don't believe in evolution, which is just mind-boggling to me.
What's mind-boggling to me is they think that actually helps them.
Right, right, yeah.
And, I mean, let's face it, I mean, we do have a lot of Christians in this nation. I wouldn't go so far as to call us a Christian nation because, as George Washington said, America is in no sense a Christian nation.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, this is a nation full of Christians, but, I mean, there's plenty of Christians that believe evolution as, you know, God had planted the seed and then the seed grew or whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are ways to incorporate both beliefs, should you choose to do so.
But when you have candidates so, you know, right-leaning and so religious or so almost evangelical in their beliefs that they're, you know, refusing to acknowledge evolution, I mean, that's got to kill some votes.
Right. That ought to scare some people is really what that ought to do. It's one thing to kind of hold these kind of extremist opinions and hold them to yourselves, but to actually think you're going to be the leader of the free world, which, is, you know, let's face it, the President of the United States is the most powerful person on the planet. And to think a person is going to be sort of that, can stand up and admit to brag about being that close-minded and that out of touch with reality is pretty frightening to me, actually.
Well, let's look at it this way. These people actually still like and support Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just crazy enough.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, I'd like to note that myself and another person I know is an old family friend has started a blog called Two Texas Liberals. It's basically an idea that I'm 17 years old, so I'm putting my ideas out there, and we're contrasting it with a 50-plus wise old wanderer. And we're hoping it picks up.
Is it the number two or the word two?
Number two. It's http://2 texasliberals.blogspot.com.
All right. I'll put a link to that over on my spot, over on my
awesome,
website, buddy.
Thank you.
All right. Best of luck. Hey, Matthew, I got to go. I can hear George Harrison quietly in the background. I mean, John Lennon in the background. So I got to get
love
going.
That guy.
Thanks for your call, buddy.
All right.
Hey, we'll be right back with more of the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Jeff Farias, filling in for Mike all week long. Give me a call. I'd love to hear what's on your mind. Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Jeff Farias, sitting in tonight and all week long for Mike Malloy. And I like to take a lot of phone calls, so I'm going to continue as such. Next up in the queue, JP in Georgia. JP, you're on the air.
Hey, good to talk to you.
Thank you, sir. Same here.
I guess I'll pick up with the Darwin thing first. It's interesting. Evolution's a scientific fact. I mean, we know that now that we know all about the genome and DNA. And the problem is anyone who says they're Darwinist is an atheist or a Republican, but then they turn around and use social Darwinism to back up their or defend their economic policies.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the same thing with the tax and spend government. I mean, to them, being a public servant isn't about how efficiently or wastefully they tax and spend. They see that as another political opinion for them to run against and to win votes.
Right, and they'd rather borrow and spend, which is so incredibly corrupt. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, or you could say they'd rather spend and tax. Right. Just keep spending now, and then let the next generation get less from their government and pay way more in taxes.
Yep.
The other thing I was calling about has to do with the budget and that's dealing with the Iraqi war that the Democrats are trying to pass.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats have put in those pullout dates an exit strategy, and I think they really need to do a good job of negotiating this because this, in a way, is our only chance. I think we can, if we play our cards right, we can get Bush to sign a budget that phases those tax cuts out by 2009,
mm-hmm.
and that forces him to say, okay, I'm not going to do a surge. I'm not going to escalate our troop levels in Iraq, because I don't think the Democrat Congress is going to be able to pull all those troops out without hurting themselves politically.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, and we found out this weekend, John Boehner went on Fox News and basically the Republicans have a timetable. They're saying they're only giving Bush until the fall, until end of September, beginning of October. And then the game's up, you know. So I mean, that's a timetable. I don't know what else you want to call it.
Yeah.
But the Republicans agree that there's got to be. I mean, there has to be a date to leave, and you're gonna have to announce that date because you know at some point we got to get out of there.
And well, not only that, we can. And basically, if you put those Republican politicians in a room
mm-hmm.
and have them ask them how many of you support the war, they'll all raise their hands. They'll say, "We all support the troops." Then you say, well, will you support a repeal of those tax cuts to fund it?
Right.
Where does that support go?
Right.
No one's got their hands up anymore.
Yeah. Drop those tax cuts and make sure every soldier has the armor he needs. Make sure his Humvee is armored up. Make sure he's got the ammunition he needs. And they don't have it. And they don't have a strategy either. They're just walking around as targets.
Yeah, well, it's going to make a lot of people cynical. Because,
yeah.
I mean, when all they do is attack tax and spend... liberalism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how are Democrats going to fight that? Are they going to say, "Well, we're going to we need to tax more and spend less for the next generation"? But that's never going to be a winning message.
Right. Well, and so much of their message is just a hatred of liberals. They don't really. I don't know what Republicans stand for anymore. Obviously, they're not about being fiscally responsible. They spend money. McCain uses the drunken sailor term, but they just spend money like it's. Like it's not theirs, basically, and it isn't.
Well, it'd be interesting if the Democrats took the same strategy, said we're going to give you more and more and more tax cuts and universal health care
mm-hmm.
and support the troops in Iraq.
Right.
You'd see, do you think the Republicans would oppose that?
I don't see how they could, although they'll just call universal health care communism, but it's, you know,
well, you might see
not.
A swap in the voters. That's
right.
One interesting thing. I think all the people who vote for Democrats would suddenly vote for the Republicans.
Right. Yeah. Hey, there is a universal health care bill out there. It's put together by John Conyers and Dennis Kucinich, and it's called H.R. 676. Check it out and let your congresspeople know that you're behind it. It basically puts together a single-payer system, much like they have in France and Canada and Great Britain and all around the world, basically. So.
I hope the Democrats play their cards right, because, like I said, the next president is going to pull the troops out.
Right.
But I think... I think if we really want the Republicans to, you know, pay for what they've done, you know, they thought there are going to be no consequences for this. We need to make them feel those consequences, not just in 2006, but 2008.
Excellent point, JP. Thanks for your call.
All right, bye.
Bye. Yeah, the 2008 election is brewing up to be quite an interesting phenomenon. I'm not even looking at the presidential election. I'm focusing more on what's going on with what's going to happen with Congress and the Senate. There are 20 Republicans who are up for election, re-election. 20 Republican senators out of the 33 that are up this time. It should be interesting to see how that plays out and what the Senate's going to do in the next year or so. How quickly they're going to get us out of this very, very unpopular war. How much bloodshed is it going to take? How many more American lives before the politics of this thing is put behind us and we start doing what's right for the troops and right for this country? Be right back. Folks, The Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Jeff Farias, filling in for Mike all week long. Glad you joined us on a Monday night. Let's get right back on the phones. Leonard in Glendale. Welcome, Leonard.
Hey, Jeff, how you doing there,
sir? Good, how you doing, buddy?
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, I've had that great dessert food over there at Honeymoon Suites. Anyway, mm-hmm. I had to put that plug in because they're great people and great supporters of the progressive community, Tim, over there.
Yeah.
But anyways, what I want to talk about real quickly, because you've got other great callers on the line and everything, is I just want people to know, you know, the Republicans, at least here in Arizona, and I'm sure across the rest of the country, you know, our officially elected Republican leader of the Party of Arizona, Randy Pullman, has said, hey, George Bush is doing a great job, and, you know, the public just came out and said, you Democrats and progressives need to shut up, and let's just keep going the course. So George Bush, Randy Pullman, John McCain, John Kyle are all down great with George Bush. So when you folks start thinking, you know, these other guys aren't connected to him, don't believe it. And as far as their timetable in the fall, now, there are a lot of talk. They've been stringing us along, Jeff. All I know is eight more of my fellow comrades just was reported in the paper as dying.
Yeah.
And, you know, every new soldier that dies, you know, that's a negligent homicide because that death did not have to happen. And I don't care whether it's a Democrat or Republican, even though now it's mainly Republicans who, you know, want to sit back in Congress and call us traitors for disagreeing, but yet I don't see them taking off their three-piece suits and riding in the Humvees with targets on their backs. You know, I'd like to see that. I don't want to see Johnny McCain and Renzi and the rest of these chicken hawks going over to Baghdad with 200 of my fellow soldiers risking their lives.
Right. Yeah.
I want to see them freaking go out in a Humvee. So, you know, also, I just wanted to also compliment Matthew over in Bedford, Texas. Boy, that mm-hmm. guy is something. I mean, I want to see, I'm going to try to get to that blog because I love that, Panic Fest 2007. That says it all right there about, you know, what's going on with the Republicans. But please, folks across this country, don't count John McCain out because, quite unfortunately, you know, primaries are usually won by the more the farther right or left you go. And the people that are going to support John McCain are way far to the right. But I think they even know John McCain is a flip-flopper. I mean, he says he's against abortion today, but look what he did on their campaign spending. Look what he did on all these other things. One day he's here, the next day he's the next. So, you know, just remember that. And last, I'll finish with this. Cheney escorted Her Royal Majesty at the 400th anniversary of Jamestown. Now, I like Queen Elizabeth, even though I don't believe in royalty. And, you know, she had to emphasize the point it was British citizens that, you know, started it all in America. But Cheney seemed to take great thrill, okay? I know he's a vice president and he escorts VIPs. He took great thrill in being photographed with royalty. Because after all, his unitary executive theory, for you Republicans out there that still think you're Republicans, if you believe in Cheney and his unitary executive theory, you are monarchist. I'm
right.
I'm calling on all the great people I know that are Republicans, Eisenhower Republicans, middle of the road Democrats, to understand your support. You know, don't, when you support these folks, you're supporting monarchy. And just be careful, because the one thing they have, especially here in Arizona, probably in Texas, is to use the immigration issue now. They're going to try to take our eye off the prize, which is getting this country back, getting our democracy back. So remember, ironically, the Republican Party claims that they're the true believers, they're patriots, and they believe in God. But really, they don't understand that they're grassroots believers. You know, Reverend Bill, if he's listening, I want you to understand, Reverend, I respect your beliefs, but the problem is your party now, your principles of your Republican Party is basically another God. You guys are committing blasphemy because the corporations, their God is money, and that is what's paying for your political party. At least with Mr. Kucinich, he will not vote along. He is not bought and paid for by the corporations. He voted against the bill where the Iraqis only got 30% of the oil, and the rest goes to private oil companies. Mr. Kucinich is not bought and paid for. So just remember that, folks. And I want to commend you, Jeff, and Mr. Malloy. I hope he's getting a good rest or wherever he's at. Cliff Schechter. You know, at therealmccain.com, Matt Renner, all these great people that call in, we just need to stick together. They're going to start assaulting us even more now, and this is the time when I'll take strength from you folks, and I'm going to listen to the rest of your callers. And Jeff, thank you for doing a great job, and hello to the rest of the country out there listening to Nova M Radio, because this is one of the last things we've got left. This is one of the last vestiges of free press that we have, and we've got to listen and support this network, because without this network, it's going to be a lot harder on us, folks. Thanks a lot, Jeff, and have a good night there.
All right, thank you, buddy. Thanks for everything you do, Leonard. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's go to Evan in Durham, North Carolina. Evan, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Let's see. I'm calling because, well, I'm calling for one thing about the lady who was having issues with her credit application. You know, I worked for a call center for a while, for a few years back, and you have to question these people. One thing I was curious about was when she saw them in person, and they still asked for this ID and Social Security card, did she challenge them on that? We have to challenge these people because everything they're doing is legal. And when you talk to them, they ask you for all of this stuff that is unreasonable, but it is legal. Now, we have to make sure that we're being treated like citizens rather than customers.
Or subjects.
Right. It's two totally different things.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the same thing that I've worked for a couple of years in a call center working with elderly people, assisting them with their benefits,
mm-hmm.
because they were retirees from these corporations. And they were calling up just totally frustrated and this sort of thing. And I just told them, you know, and this wasn't, you know, I think this is one of the reasons why I got eventually laid off from there was, I would tell them right there on the phone, you know, everything that we do may be objectionable to you, but it's legal.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get active and talk to your representative about what you disagree about as far as this system. And if we demand to be treated like citizens rather than simply as customers, this is the sort of thing that will change.
Right. Well, no, there's been a lot of changes in the way these big financial institutions are allowed to interact with their customers. There was that bankruptcy bill that went through a couple of years ago that a lot of Democrats got behind too, and put this thing out there that gives these credit card companies just unprecedented leeway in terms of how they deal with you and how they I went through it personally. I had an electronic payment that didn't go through on one of our credit cards, and they upped our rate from 13% to 32%.
Thank Joe Biden for
overnight.
That.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
overnight
Joe Biden. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Joe Biden and,
exactly.
And a lot of people in Congress voted for it. A lot of Democrats in the House voted for that as well.
Definitely. And you know, that puts me in the mind of something else. Giving away our right to the judicial process,
mm-hmm.
By going to arbitration.
Right.
That's stuff that's written in this language. You know, people have been asleep for a while, and you know, when you have to give up, you know, when you sign up for these credit cards and whatnot, and
mm-hmm.
they say, well, if there's a problem, then we take it to arbitration
right.
that they are paying for.
right. Yeah, it's their lawyers. Again, yeah, this thing was gamed, and, you know, I'd be willing to bet the vast majority of our elected officials didn't even read that bill because they don't even read them anymore, and it goes back to one of the first callers we had tonight talking about how the corporations have taken over this country. This country doesn't exist for its citizens anymore. It exists on behalf of the shareholders and the corporations.
Right.
And it goes back to that same thing. A lobbyist from the credit card companies wrote that actual MBNA wrote that bill and put it through, essentially. So, you know.
Thanks, man. Thanks
how do we break out of it? Thanks, Evan. Good talking to you. We're going to take a break. Let's see who we got. We got Nancy. We got Robin. We got Joe. Another caller coming in right now. Plenty of calls. Plenty to talk about. The Mike Malloy Show. I'm Jeff Farias. Stick around, folks.
so long ago in Oklahoma. The son of an Okie preacher knelt to pray. He said, Lord, I want to be a Christian soldier just like you, and fight to build a new and better day. Now many years and miles from Oklahoma, that same young Okie boy still kneels to pray. But he don't pray to be no Christian soldier anymore. He just prays to make it through another day. 'Cause it's hard to be a Christian soldier when you tote a gun, and it hurts to have to watch a grown man cry. But we're playing cards, riding home, and having lots of fun, telling jokes and learning how to die.
Hey, we're back, folks. It's the Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. I'm Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike all week long. Got a full board of callers, so I'm just going to get right to it. Nancy in Phoenix. Nancy, how are you tonight?
Well, hi, Jeff. Aren't you tickled that tonight the king, the commander guy, the is entertaining the queen?
I know.
Whoa!
In a white tie.
And Leonard is right. We have a monarchy.
Yep.
Yeah. You'll be happy to know that I believe in evolution. But every once in a while you get a mutant, and we know where he is, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I'm flipped. Tonight, I'm just so exasperated. Let's give some credit to some of the Dems. Henry Waxman, Patrick Leahy, John Murtha, Russ Feingold, Christopher Dodd, Barbara Boxer, Dennis Kucinich. Let's give some of them credit. Let's not just say that we're going to throw them all out with the bathwater.
Right. There are a lot of Dems. And again, I tried to mention that.
Doing the hard work.
Yep.
They are taking names. They are crossing their T's and dotting their I's, and they have nothing unless they're under oath and they have documentation. They have nothing.
Right.
And that's what Waxman is doing and Leahy's doing. So let's give them some credit. And in fairness, they have a very, very slim majority.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't for Lieberman, things would be a hell of a lot better in the Senate.
Yeah, no kidding.
But,
Ned Lamont's looking a lot better now, isn't he?
Jeez. Oh, absolutely. What a loss.
Yeah.
What an Iraq War veteran.
Yeah.
There's a book for those of you out there in Radio Land that are at the end of your rope and just need somebody that speaks the truth. There is a book out, just came out, and it's by, maybe you don't like him, I don't know, his name is Lee Iacocca.
Oh, sure.
And the book is Where Have All the Leaders Gone?
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. And here's just a little snippet. Quote, am I the only guy in this country who's fed up with what's happening? Where the hell is our outrage? We should be screaming bloody murder. We've got a gang of clueless bozos steering our ship of state right over the cliff. We've got corporate gangsters stealing us blind, and we can't even clean up after a hurricane, much less build a hybrid car. But instead of getting mad, everyone sits around and nods their heads while the politicians say, stay the course. Stay the course? You've got to be kidding. This is America, not the damned Titanic. I love it. I love
great.
It.
That's
it's a great.
Great
book. It's an easy read. And I heard this. I want to share this with you. And tell me if you have heard this. And it made my hair stand on end. I was listening to the Young Turks earlier this week in the morning. And I heard them say that the Iraqi parliament is going on vacation.
Yep, for two months.
Yeah.
The month of July and the month of August.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now, here's where we're going with this. We are told that we can't have a military solution. We can't have a military solution, but a political solution.
Mm-hmm.
And our soldiers are in Iraq in July and August when it's 130 friggin' degrees. There's sandstorms. They're in the crosshairs. Why don't they come home for a recess and come home to Kansas and Georgia and Louisiana and Mississippi and do some of the work here and get together with their families, reacquaint themselves? What do you think, Jeff?
Sounds like a plan to me, Nancy. Thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Take care. We'll be right back with more of the Mike Malloy Show on November Radio. I'm Jeff Ferris. It's the Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. I'm Jeff Farias, sitting in for Mike all week long. I'm going to take a lot of callers. First up is Robin in Los Angeles. Robin, welcome to the program.
Howdy.
How you doing today?
A couple of points on the whole gas price thing.
Mm-hmm.
You remember the first gas crunch back in the 70s? My uncle was working for Standard Oil at their Richmond, California refinery. They had him heating up the oil to get it through the pipes fast enough to get it into the tanks fast enough so that they could get the tankers off the coast where the public could see them.
Huh.
And then when the tank farms were all filled up and we were still in the middle of the oil crisis, there were five more tankers out there waiting to unload.
Wow.
And today, what was it, about a year and a half ago, I was listening to Randy Rhoads. And she was talking about a dinner that the big oil companies had for all of their big stockholders. And at this dinner, they were just having a big party, and they were telling everybody, they were bragging about how they managed to decrease production by 5 or maybe it was 15%, and at the same time, increased demand by 50 or 60%, creating a perfect storm for higher profits during high oil prices,
right?
High crude prices. So, the refineries that are there are probably just working real hard trying to keep up with everything.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is there's fewer refineries now than there were.
Right. Right.
Now, and therefore, the supply and demand thing kicks in.
Well, Greg Palast's theory is that the reason we went into Iraq was not to get the oil, but to keep it in the ground.
To keep it from flowing, because if it flows, then that makes more available, which drives down the cost.
And Saddam was also hinting that he was going to switch to the euro and start trading his oil in euros instead of dollars.
That's what took out the Shah, basically.
Right, right.
The Shah was talking about nationalizing his oil, the guy that we put in place of the Shah.
Right.
He was talking about nationalizing his oil and making it belong to all the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sent our guys in there and took him out and replaced him with the Shah.
Right, right.
So it's no wonder Iran's pissed off at us.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, blowback, I think they call that in the CIA.
Yeah. And poetic justice.
Yeah, no kidding.
But at any rate, keep it lit. Keep up the good fight. We will get on top of these guys. It's just going to take a lot of pain.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Robin. Appreciate your call.
Take care.
Thanks for waiting. It's interesting. My buddy Alan, who calls in quite a bit, Alan here in Scottsdale, sent me an email offline. I just wanted to read it. It says, as I've mentioned in some of my previous calls, the fate of the Republicans and Democrats are inversely proportional. Every day from here on out, they grow weaker and we stronger. He attaches an article from USA Today about 20 staffers leaving 6 months earlier than they should from the Bush administration, and there's no way for their replacements to get in and actually be effective at these jobs in the short amount of time. Certainly bad news for Bush and his cronies. From here on out, he writes, it will be death by slow bleeding from 1,000 cuts for Bush and company. Hence, folks on the left should start acting like the winners they are and prepare to take over the running of this country. There is no way Republicans can win the White House in 08. Thanks, Alan. Let's get back to the phones. Joe in Tempe, you're up.
Hey, what'd you think of Tommy Thompson in the debate the other night?
I don't think he was all that. I don't think any of them were all that impressive, to tell you the truth.
Did you hear him say that the employer should have the right to fire gay people if they?
Yeah, he since corrected himself on that and said he didn't hear, his hearing aid wasn't working or something like that.
And what'd you think about how three of the candidates, they don't even believe in evolution. They believe in Adam and Eve. What'd you think of that?
Well, I think that's kind of scary, actually. I think you can, you know, I think you can believe in both if you want. But the whole idea that they were willing, you know, applying for the job of most powerful man in the world, that they were willing to raise their hands and say that their thinking hasn't evolved in 300 years.
And what'd you think of John McCain, where he almost melted down on the stage as he said that he would, it doesn't look like he can walk across the stage yet, he's going to hunt Osama down personally to the end of the earth.
Yeah, he looked desperate.
Let me tell you something. These candidates stink.
Mm-hmm.
Mitt Romney is a phony. He's really a liberal in disguise. Rudy Giuliani, I don't know why he's even up there. What did he accomplish?
Right.
They're a bunch of losers, but I got news for you. We got a winner coming. His name's Fred Thompson.
Well,
he's about 6 foot 5 inches tall. He's a movie star. He reminds me of Ronald Reagan.
Well,
and I'm going to tell you something, Jeff. I respect you.
Mm-hmm.
But this will be our next president of the United States because the trash we have. I hate to call a Republican candidate trash, but I watched that debate, and I couldn't believe what the hell I was seeing.
Yeah, you know, Thompson's got some his own issues to deal with, too. You know, he's not necessarily that conservative or that. He ran, when he was a senator from Tennessee, he ran pretty much as a moderate, as sort of a middle-of-the-road kind of guy.
Well, they do that to trick the voters.
Right.
You know, it's all politics is a big game. Now, I want to say one other thing. From this point forward, I would appreciate it if you would refer to the war in Iraq as the democratically sponsored war in Iraq.
No.
Since now,
you ain't getting
point,
away with that one. That's what Rush Limbaugh is trying to do.
That is correct.
Yeah.
We've got our talking points, but let me just tell you this. As of now, it is the democratic war in Iraq. You control the spending. You guys don't want to shut it off. So you know what? You voted for it. Now you don't want to vote against it. It's your war.
So you want us out of there as well. We agree on that much, right? You think we should get out of Iraq?
Well, the way I would do it is simple. I think that it's a waste because you're never going to make a democracy out of a bunch of Muslims. A. B, they're having fun killing our boys. C, the way to win that war is to take the boys out of Iraq and go airborne. Shock and awe part two. Let's start bombing them into the Stone Age.
Well, what does that accomplish, though? It just makes more enemies.
Teach them a lesson.
What
don't
lesson?
Mess with GWB.
Well, that's not a lesson that's going to do him much good. He's on his way out, and I prefer people messing.
What would
mess
you?
With
let
him.
Me ask you this, Jeff. Jeff.
Yeah.
What do you prefer, men on the ground or bombs going down through the air?
Neither. Neither. I think we
that's
should just be
that's the
problem
out of that. With you liberals. You don't know how to use the military.
Well, we do know how to use the military. We used it pretty well in Somalia. We used it pretty well in Kosovo.
Oh, please.
What
please.
Do you mean, please?
We're trying to support a bunch of Muslims.
How many people, American citizens died in Kosovo?
I care about this war because this war is now. Liberalism is a mental disorder.
Liberals also won World War II, the Civil War. World War One. I don't know. Liberals do know how to run a war. It's these Republicans that keep screwing it up. Let's go to Bruce in Oregon. Bruce, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, I have a question I've been trying to get an answer is, when the parliament of the Iraqi government left town for 2 months just recently.
They haven't left yet. They're planning on that in July and August.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, when they do, it's at a time when I'm assuming our administration wants to keep the show going, because mm-hmm. I believe one of the benchmarks in the Bush scene is to allow the U.S. oil companies to privatize 80% of the oil fields. And when I heard that these parliamentary guys are going to leave for a while, I thought that was a good scene. Just put that aside, out of mind, and let's keep Iraq oil national. But what do you think?
Well, I think it's I think that's part of the carrot that they can hold out there to try and bring some peace to Iraq. I heard one part of the Biden plan is to divide it up into three separate, give the Kurds their own, the Shia their own, the Sunnis their own states almost, or regions, and share the oil between among the, in four ways, split it between each of the three groups to run their governments, and also take one percentage of it and split it among every Iraqi citizen so that there's some chance for their economy to grow and get kickstarted again. So
I think
oil sharing is the only way to do it.
Right. One other thing. The last caller, those things don't bother me anymore when it's 28% approval rating for George.
Yeah.
They're scary people. I mean, how would you fathom killing another 100,000 innocent people, children, mothers, uncles, extended families? I don't get those people. They don't scare me. They're the ones that are in the Stone Age.
Right.
But anyways, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bruce. I appreciate it. Yeah, for every innocent Iraqi that is killed, we create dozens more enemies over there, and dozens more people with less and less to live for, willing to attack us. And that's what we're up against here, folks. That's what we're up against. You don't solve anything by more murder. Well, we're going to take a break, folks. When we get back, we'll last segment here. We'll take some more phone calls. Looks like I got Richard over in Texas waiting for me. We'll be right back after these important messages. Stick around, folks. Show right here on the Nova M Radio Network. My name is Jeff Farias. I got a website called jefffarias.com, oddly enough, and you can send me an email at jeff@jefffarias.com. Many of you have over the course of the evening, and I thank you. It's good to hear from you. Let's get back to the phones, though. Richard in Texas is holding. Richard, welcome. Richard, you there?
Yeah, how you doing this evening?
Good. How you doing today?
Trying to get through another day of listening to some jackass caller sometimes. That conservative caller you had a minute ago, three quick comments on him.
Mm-hmm.
One, if liberalism can be considered a disease, as he said, conservatism can too, because it goes both sides of the scale as far as it's a balanced thing. Secondly, if we're going to bomb the hell out of these people, I think we're going to make more enemies in the Muslim world.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not a smart move. You get too many people pissed off at you by doing something like that. And thirdly, when it comes to fighting wars, I was military, my dad was military, my brother was military. All of us are considering ourselves Democrats. We're not like our brave, fearless leader that knows how to land, quote-unquote, a plane in a, you know, friendly, safe harbor, knows how to guard the skies of Texas while people are actually getting killed in action. So that fella is just kind of a bit of a dummy, if I may say so.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got, man. That guy just ticked me off, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I hear you. The whole notion, you know, and again, he's I've spoken to him on my during my show. I have a show that runs right before Malloy on Nova M, and he's called me before to just, you know, the whole notion that we had to just bomb them all and kill them all and basically just some sort of a genocide was going to solve our problems. The problem was that there were just too many Muslims in the world, and the more we killed, the better off we'd be. You know, it's kind of a coward's way out, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it is, because if you think about it, I mean, Bush himself has stated that Iran is supplying weapons to Iraq. You know, there's reports out that Egypt is supplying money and supplies and people to the Iraqis. You got a major chasm between the Sunni and the Shia religions. And that's the first problem. And you cannot solve a problem by forcing a gun into their face and saying, here's a solution. No, you sit down with people, you talk with people, you find common ground, and you begin to discuss what may lead to a possible peace solution.
Right.
Just like the Palestinian-Israeli issue, just like the English-Irish issue, you know, it's not something that you can force a gun into their face and say, here's the solution.
Right.
It doesn't work that way, because all you're going to do is continue to breed people that will hate you. They will hate your ideology. They will hate your philosophy for what you have done to them in days gone past. Back in 1953, when our government killed the rightly elected Iranian leader and installed the Shah in power, is one of the problems that we had back in late 78 and 79 when the Ayatollah came to power.
Yep, excellent point. You know, murder just makes enemies. You don't make any friends by killing people. Yeah, so.
There are times that it is necessary to go to war.
Right.
It's like Carter said within the last 8 or 10 months, whatever it was. It is a necessary evil sometimes, but it is still an evil. Unfortunately, it does have to be done. Look at Hitler. Look at World War One. Look at the Civil War. Look at the Revolution.
Right.
You
know what
sometimes, I mean?
Sometimes it's again, it's supposed to be a last resort, not a preemptive strike, they sit there and they marketed this thing, and they even told us they were marketing it. They were launching a new product. They were waiting till September, and they marketed a war to us. I hope history remembers them for what they really are, you know, and I hope Americans are smart enough to never fall for this kind of thing again.
Yeah, well, I hope that the long 6-year slumber and party is kind of starting to hit these people in the head, because we need to get the hell out of there. I mean, there is no solution except diplomatic.
Right.
And I got a feeling that's going to be a long, hard road to look at anywhere you go.
Yeah. Good point, Richard. Thanks for your call today, buddy.
All right, man. Have a good evening.
You too. We got a long road ahead of us. I don't envy whoever. You know, I saw those 8 Democrats get up there on the stage wanting to be president. Well, I don't envy any of them that job. They're going to be inheriting a mess of historic proportions, folks, on so many levels of government. The one thing we've learned since the Democrats took over the Congress in January, that this corruption infests every level of our government. There are cronies everywhere, and it's going to take a generation to weed them all out and get this country up and running again and serving the people of this country once again. No small chore ahead of us. I don't know if any of the 8 I saw is necessarily up to the job as yet. They're going to have to surround themselves with some pretty incredible people to pull it off. But I am hopeful. There are a lot of good Democrats out of there, and there are a lot of Democrats doing good work out there. Rocky Anderson, I don't know if any of you saw the audio of that. He had a debate with Sean Hannity over the weekend. Rocky Anderson, of course, the mayor of Salt Lake City, Utah, a Democrat, debated Sean Hannity in a public forum. Very inspiring. Lots of just great things. I think there's lots of great leadership, lots of great energy in the Democratic Party now for the first time in a number of years. And I think it's very, very encouraging. I want to echo Alan's words again. We have to start thinking of ourselves as winners and acting that way. The path is laid out in front of us, folks. The Democrats can take over all three branches of government, and they better start doing some good things with it. I got to say that. We can't just run on how bad the Republicans are, as bad as they are. We have to bring forward new ideas and better solutions and better ways to solve these problems. Hey, I want to put in a quick plug before I go. My buddy Sarge, you didn't hear him call today. He's here in Phoenix, lives here in Phoenix now, has a new program, airs every Sunday morning, 10 a.m. on the East Coast. Check it out at novamradio.com. We're going to have some podcasts up and running on that one as well. His show is unreportednews.net show, dedicated entirely to Gulf Coast and Katrina issues. So do tune in. Do check that one out. Give Sarge all your support. He deserves it. We'll be right back. We won't be back, actually. I'm done for the night. I want to thank Ian Huff. Everything you heard came through his nimble fingers, handling all the engineering and phone duties here tonight at the station. I want to thank everyone who called in and participated, shared their ideas with us tonight. I want to thank everyone for listening, everyone who emailed me. Thanks to Mike Malloy for letting me sit in this chair. And thanks to all of you. Look forward to talking to you again tomorrow night.